On tonight's show, our Eastern Conference preview. Can the retooled New York Knicks contend? How will Paul George help the Sixers? And can anyone really beat the Celtics? All this and more tonight. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Crossover Across Time podcast. We're right back on after our surprise second episode of the season, our off-season news update, and we're here with our planned Wednesday episode where we're going to give you our Eastern Conference preview. We're going to go team by team, breaking down expectations, new additions, departures, kind of, you know, where they're coming from, where they're going, what to expect this season from them, I suppose, is probably the best way to summarize that. First of all, I'm your host, Carson Keel. Welcome to the show and or welcome back to the show. Both previous listeners and brand new listeners alike, thank you for tuning in to the show. We really can't thank you enough for your support. I'll be honest with you, we're recording this a little bit later on Wednesday night, so we're going to hopefully get this done in a pretty timely manner so we can get it uploaded before the clock turns to Thursday night, but we'll see exactly how it goes. I think I've got us all ready here, so without further ado, let's go ahead and get started. The first team we're going to be talking about is the New York Knicks, and we're going to string these right along. You probably won't see much of me, but we have some visuals here. We have summarized what they did last season in terms of record and or playoff appearances, how deep they went. We have their key additions, departures, rookies, re-signed and extended players, as well as where they're at with their draft capital for the upcoming future and what our projection is loosely for this upcoming season. And with the Knicks, man, I don't think that we've seen a team with this much turnover and this much shifting for a couple of seasons now. They did so many different moves this last offseason, which is surprising because, again, they finished 50-32. They were the second best team in the Eastern Conference. And without some injuries, they probably would have been a conference finalist and given the Boston Celtics a pretty good run for their money, not to discredit what the Pacers did in defeating them in the second round. But it was a hobbled Knicks team. I think that's fair to recognize that fact. This past season was easily their best season in about 20 years since the early 2000s when they were, in conference finals, and they made, of course, the NBA finals in 1999. Much of it is continually made possible now by the discounted extension that Jalen Brunson signed. He could have signed for much more this upcoming offseason. However, he chose to take a lower amount now so that the team would have an easier time signing star players such as OG Anunoby. They kept him around. That was huge, as well as Precious Achiuwa. I think that was big, a nice role player. And then, of course, they made the big trades. Karl-Anthony Towns and Mikal Bridges both brought in. For a very brief couple of months, we had Brunson, Hart, Bridges and DiVincenzo all on the same team. It truly was the Nova Knicks. Those four star players from the Villanova teams of the late 2010s. However, DiVincenzo will not be on the team to start the season. He was part of the Towns trade. He's now a member of the Minnesota Timberwolves, but still a lot of Nova players there, a lot of chemistry there. And it's interesting, losing Julius Randle, DiVincenzo, as well as Isaiah Hartenstein to free agency, those are big losses, but of course they're bringing in some key guys to replace them. So the talent level is still very good. The chemistry, I think, is a question mark, as well as the future of their draft capital. I mean, they have some more draft picks than I might have thought, but when they have those picks is perhaps a question. Mitchell Robinson, he's out for the first few months, so their center depth will be a bit of a question mark as well. And, Thibodeau and the injuries, I think that's a big thing for this team going forward. Can they stay healthy in the postseason? Can Thibodeau figure out a way to make sure the team stays healthy? And it's not always fully his fault, but it's been a recurring theme. So it makes you kind of wonder about how that all comes into play. So That's our first team we're talking about. How about another team that's going to be very competitive in the Eastern Conference here in the Philadelphia 76ers? Last season, with an injury to a Joel Embiid, they were not able to finish where we thought they would have finished if he was healthy. I mean, at a certain point, they were one of the top three teams in the Eastern Conference. Without him, they slid very much, even with the emergence of Tyrese Maxey as an all-star player. Embiid came back, and they had a dogfight of a first-round series in which they lost to those New York Knicks, the aforementioned Knicks, if I can not fumble over my words here a little bit. And there's a bit of a new-look supporting cast for Joel Embiid and Tyrese Maxey, especially with Paul George being brought on, new signee. He's the third star of this new big three in Philadelphia. They've also brought in some nice supporting members, Caleb Martin, Andre Drummond, and Eric Gordon. A lot of different things those three guys bring to the table. Drummond returning to Philly. He's been here previously. And again, Joel Embiid and Tyrese Maxey signed big extensions as well. So they're going to be a long-term part of this equation for Philly, as should be Paul George on his new deal. You know, can they escape the second round? That's sort of the question mark here. Can they break through and be a true contender in the Eastern Conference that we feel like they've almost been the last couple of years? Embiid's long-term health is a big part of that discussion. He will have a little bit of load management type of things, or, you know, figuring out how to stay a bit healthier, stay a bit fresher throughout the year. And then Nick Nurse, a championship head coach with the Raptors, he will continue to lead the charge here, and not a bad choice, certainly. Should be very exciting to see what the Philadelphia 76ers can do this season. Let's next talk about a team that surprised a lot of people last year, and the Indiana Pacers had the same record as the Sixers. A lot of teams are at that 47-win mark. The Pacers actually made it to the conference finals. They upset the Knicks and even the Bucks in the first round, some would say. They were swept in the conference final by the Celtics, but it was still a great success of a season for a young team, and not too much turnover, especially with the fact that they were able to re-sign Pascal Siakam. That was huge to keep the core intact. They did big extensions for guys like Obi Toppin, TJ McConnell, rather, and Andrew Nembhard, so they keep that core in. The rookie, Johnny Furthy, what role is he going to have exactly? That'll be intriguing to see. And, you know, the swapping of James Wiseman now in, the departure of Jalen Smith, a small wrinkle in that backup front court situation there. But, you know, there's going to be more expectation for the Pacers. The expectation is the playoffs and deep playoff runs. Can they bring some defensive improvements along with the massive offensive output they had last season? Those are just a couple questions. But the Pacers are certainly well poised for a bright future here, as are the Orlando Magic. They broke out as well last year, and they did it in the reverse way. They were defensively potent, perhaps to a fault. They struggled to find the offense at times in that first-round loss to the Cleveland Cavaliers, despite it being a seven-game series. But they made some nice moves, especially bringing in Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, one of the top-rated true free agent signings to a brand-new team this past offseason. He has championship experience with the Lakers and the Nuggets. He should bring invaluable veteran experience to this young Magic team. And then how about a bunch of re-signings and extensions for the core? They bring back Franz Wagner and his brother Maurice Wagner. Wendell Carter Jr.'s sticking around, as is Jonathan Isaac. Goga Bitadze, Gary Harris, they're all sticking around. They're keeping a lot of continuity, which can be great for team success long term. Again, they need to get better offensively. Paolo Banchero is going to be the center of that as he continues to rise, a first-time All-Star last season. And, you know, they've got strong draft capital as well. You know, the future is very bright in Orlando. They should at least be a playoff team again this year, and really the sky's the limit for the next while. If they can continue to improve, Banchero can continue to improve. This team should be very, very good for a little while to come. Let's next talk about a Bulls team that's maybe heading a little bit more in the opposite direction. A team that had the capability to make the playoffs and had star-level players and has some stars still, but they're starting to dismantle it a bit, or at least they did with the trading away of DeMar DeRozan and also Alex Caruso, two players that help you win now, Drummond leaving as well. They bring in Josh Giddey, who's an intriguing younger guard, a dynamic guard, who has possibility to showcase more of what he's capable of doing. and then they add, you know, Jalen Smith to bolster their front court a little bit. But there's a lot more opportunity for other guys to step up. You know, we'll have to watch for Zach LaVine. What happens with him this year? Feels like he's a possible trade target the last couple of years. Does that finally come to pass before this trade deadline? Is it next offseason's type of move? You know, they have some draft picks to work with, and they have a young draft pick, a rookie coming in this year, Matas Buzelis, who has a bit of that Chicago background and a storyline. He should have an opportunity to become hopefully a fan favorite and have some success there. But the Bulls look like they're heading and probably should head towards a little bit more of a genuine rebuild and get some pieces that are going to be long term able to affect winning in Chicago. But we'll see what they're able to do. Zach LaVine, if he has some sort of a bounce back year this year, it's hard to say. Let's next jump to the Toronto Raptors. Last season, one of the bottom teams, bottom third teams in the Eastern Conference, 12th overall. And they made a myriad of moves this past offseason. The focus, of course, is continuing to build around a lot of young talent they have. They have a fan favorite coach in Darko Rajakovic. Scotty Barnes is the focal point and the cornerstone for this franchise. And Emmanuel Quickley is an intriguing player. Both of those guys were extended, so they're around long term. How good can both of those players be? And how about RJ Barrett as well, a third factor? His play has kind of plateaued over the last couple of years, and he's a guy that we thought had immense offensive potential going into New York in, what was that, 2018, 2019, and he hasn't really shown that as much. I mean, he's been a serviceable player, a quality starter. He's had some nice scoring games. He can hit shots. He's, you know, he's capable, but he hasn't broken out like the high draft pick that he was, and so we'll have to see if that ever really comes to pass or if he's just, you know, a decent starter in the NBA. Rookie opportunities are here as well. A number of rookies, especially Jacoby Walter, maybe even Jamal Shedd, but you know, there's also a spotlight on Grady Dick, who's going into his sophomore season as a guard. You know, they need some guard play along with Emmanuel Quickley. Probably still a lottery team, but Barnes could be a phenomenal two-way player. That seems to be where he's growing, you know, his size, strength, length, and versatility, especially defensively, seems to lend itself well to that. So we'll see exactly how the Raptors grow going forward. Going to the Brooklyn Nets, they finished a little bit better than the Raptors last year. I don't think they'll finish quite as good this year. I think they're heading much more towards a rebuild as well. They definitely did a great job rebuilding their future in draft capital. They did some big trades with the Knicks and the Rockets to get a lot of draft picks back, and they've gone from a couple years ago having no real draft future in terms of picks to now they have a lot of picks, and they have the potential to build through the draft over the next couple of years. They have young players. They also have this Ben Simmons guy. There's kind of an enigma there. What role does he play with this team? Is he some sort of a trade piece? We'll have to see what exactly happens with Ben Simmons and if he can ever return to the level of play that we saw from him in Philadelphia, where he was almost an all-star level type of player, a unique big point guard who can defend like crazy, can play make, not really a scorer, certainly not a scorer. But again, rebuilding roster. They've got Cam Thomas as well. He has immense potential as a scorer. What else can he do? And I almost wonder, looking at this roster and this team, are the Nets going to be sellers at the trade deadline this season? They've got Simmons, they've got Bogdanovich, Cameron Johnson, Dennis Schroeder, and then they've also got a new head coach, Jordy Fernandez. This will be certainly a year to see what you've got in him, what style he brings, and how that gels with the talent that you have on the roster at the moment. So definitely a year to start figuring it out for the Nets, and hopefully the Wizards can start figuring things out too. They finished last season just one win better than the Detroit Pistons, who set a record for longest losing streak in NBA history. It almost looked like the Wizards would finish with the worst overall record. Didn't quite happen, but still a very poor team and a team that doesn't have as bright of an outlook in the near future as Detroit does, seemingly. Detroit, I like their additions a lot more this offseason. Washington bringing in some veterans in Valanciunas, Malcolm Brogdon, Sadiq Bey. Those guys will help win them some games, but it's bizarre because you have Valanciunas taking away perhaps post opportunities for the young rookie Alex Saar to develop in there. In a sense, we'll see how they play together. And then I don't know. It's just weird to bring in guys that are going to help you perhaps win a little bit more now when you're a team that you know you're not going to win that many games. You would think that they're going to be high lottery picks, maybe hoping they can luck into that number one pick for a player like a Cooper Flagg or whoever that it ends up being once we get into May and June. They did trade away Denny Avdia, Tyus Jones. He left in free agency, rather. And so they lost some talent. They added some talent. They've got some rookies that are intriguing. You know, where does Jordan Poole and Kyle Kuzma, where those two guys fit into this equation? And how does new head coach Brian Keefe, who was the interim coach last year, you know, how does he factor into this as well? What style does he bring? I don't know. It should just be a year for young guys to develop, similar to what we said with the Brooklyn Nets, and figure out what they have as far as their talent is concerned. And you might think a lot of the same of the Detroit Pistons. I think it's a little bit different, though. Again, last year, incredibly disappointing. They had brought in Monty Williams as head coach because they wanted to turn to figure out how to win. And that didn't quite happen. Just the opposite. They won 14 games. They were last in the entire NBA. The massive losing streak, it was just crushing, you know. And you could see the disappointment on all the players' faces, especially Cade Cunningham, who's a number one overall pick. He looks like he has all-star potential and is starting to trend towards that way. But the team needs to start to trend upwards. If he wants to be an all-star, and also if they just want to win, of course, that's a no-brainer. They've brought a new head coach, JB Bickerstaff. He was the coach with the Cavs to help propel them into the playoffs. Hopefully he can bring that same success. Cade Cunningham has been extended long-term, so he's committed to the Pistons so long as they don't trade him. So he's there. Barring some sort of a total team blow-up if the team continues to struggle immensely. And I like their additions. They brought in Tobias Harris, who's technically returning. He was in Detroit previously. They've also brought in Malik Beasley. That's going to help out their offense a lot. They're going to be able to score, put points on the board, knock down three-point shots, especially with Malik Beasley, quietly underrated this past season in his ability to knock down the three-point shot. And the continued development of Jalen Duren and Isaiah Stewart in the front court will allow them to be strong there. They've also got an intriguing rookie in Ron Holland II. At one point, he looked like, you know, a contender for a number one pick in this most recent draft. He fell out of that type of a position. So I think there's a lot of optimism around Detroit. I don't think it's out of the, you know, it's too crazy to where, oh, they can make the play-in tournament or playoffs. I don't think that would be quite realistic. I think they're still a draft lottery type of team, but I think that they should be closer to, you know, they have a whiff of a play-in. You know, they're 12th in the East rather than 15th, or maybe even 11th, something of that nature. I think that there's growth possible for Detroit, and I think there's immense growth possible for the Charlotte Hornets. They finished last season with 21 wins, just ahead of the Wizards and the Pistons, but with a guy in LaMelo Ball who has missed so much time with injury, if he's healthy and they've got the continued development of some of the pieces they already have there, this team should be good. Again, health the key there, but they retained Miles Bridges, who is talented despite the off-court issues. Brandon Miller could have a strong sophomore year. And those are three very talented guys, along with a decent supporting cast, a cast that's been refined a little bit. They brought in a new rookie, Tijon Salon, who should help out the front court with some good power forward play. He seems like a strong, athletic guy. Josh Green acquisition, he has the playoff experience from Dallas. They have a new head coach in Charles Lee. He comes from the Celtics program that is so accustomed to winning in that Eastern Conference. And I think this team realistically has a chance to slip into a play-in spot, especially with the slippage of teams like Chicago losing some of their star players. If, again, this is all dependent on the health of the team, but keeping those guys, even Seth Curry, his three-point shooting ability, I think that's going to be pivotal. I think the Hornets should be a dark horse play-in team this upcoming year. A team that should certainly be in the play-in picture is the Atlanta Hawks. 36 wins last year. They made the play-in. They lost to the Bulls. And they made moves, and I think they made a move that was a bit of an addition by subtraction deal. DeJounte Murray going to the Pelicans. They bring in a good backup point guard, a young backup point guard, in Dyson Daniels. And they also add Larry Nance Jr., who will bolster their front court. So kind of a veteran infusion with those two guys. But DeJounte Murray leaving, this is not a knock on Murray. He's a high-quality, you know, near all-star player at various points in his career, but his fit alongside Trae Young, it just didn't work. Simple as that. And so Trae Young, pure point guard play, he can distribute to other guys, and he can distribute to the number one overall pick, the rookie wing Zachary Risacher, a lengthy, lanky, taller wing guy who has a lot of various skills. He seems to play with a bit of flair as well, so it should be exciting. Young and Risacher with their kind of fun style of play. They've also got Jalen Johnson, who was the bright spot for him last year, surging. And, you know, they've bolstered their draft capital, too. They added some first-round picks. They have some good draft picks in the future. Play-in tournament, I think, is an easy choice. And if they can manage it right, you know, and Quinn Snyder finds a nice groove and rhythm with Trae Young and the rest of the team, the Hawks could be pretty good. You know, I think that there's a lot to be excited about there with Atlanta. Now, with Miami in that same division, the Heat, this is a different equation. Now, they won plenty of games last year. They made the playoffs, lost in the first round to the Celtics in a five-game gentleman's sweep. But as Jimmy Butler gets older, and he's had a little bit of now some strife, perhaps, not strife, but little disagreements with the patriarch of the Heat, Pat Riley, there's question marks about the future of this team that has been very, very good in the Eastern Conference for 5 or 6 years now. You know, could they be heading towards a downturn? It's really hard to say. Jimmy Butler does seem more focused this year. We didn't see the media day antics of the weird hairstyles like we've seen in past seasons. They extended Bam Adebayo. They kept a lot of the front court guys, Kevin Love, Thomas Bryant. They retained Haywood Highsmith as well. So that was good. How do Tyler Hero and Jaime Jaquez Jr., you know, take over some of that backcourt responsibility? Those are the key guys at the guard positions. And they lost some key role players, Caleb Martin, especially, along with DeLon Wright. Those are big names to lose. And, you know, they had some nice defensive moments. Martin, big playoff moments for the Heat in that finals run the season before this last. And so it'd be interesting to see what they do. They did add front court depth with their rookie draft pick, Khalil Ware. And they also have Pella Larson, who's a wing that sounds like he could be all right. Not a lot of draft capital going forward. I see them more as a play-in type of team, and I'm a little concerned about the future of the Heat as Butler gets older and as that relationship continues to evolve with him and the team and Pat Riley. It is hard to say how the Heat will do long-term. Milwaukee Bucks are also interesting. Of course, they won a lot of games last year, 49 wins. They lose in the first round in a six-game series to the Indiana Pacers, and the year was seen as a disappointment because there were such high expectations. They had made the trade to bring in Damian Lillard as the best co-star that Giannis has had up to that point in terms of just pure talent. Of course, the Bucks already having won a championship in 2021 with Drew Holiday, Chris Middleton. Middleton's still there. You know, the defense is the thing that people are pointing to. They've got to improve the defensive play of the team and the team harmony in general to be able to win now. That's the goal. Win now with Lillard and Giannis while Lillard is still near the prime of his career. He's starting to maybe have a downturn or will have a downturn soon. They signed Gary Trent Jr. They bring him in. He reunites with Damian Lillard. They were with each other, you know, teammates with the Blazers at one point in time. Torian Prince and DeLon Wright strengthen the bench and the defensive identity of the team as a whole. And the health of Chris Middleton is, again, a question. He's missed some preseason time. I don't know how healthy he is for this season. We'll see if he's able to play. Is Doc Rivers the right coach for this team? They don't have a lot of draft capital for the future. They should still be a playoff team, but how does it all come together? There's a lot of questions here. And if Giannis can be a tone setter defensively, which he certainly is capable of, and I don't think he's really the issue defensively, but if they can come together as a team defensively, I think that atones for a lot of the questions and the, you know, issues of the team. They can be very good, and they have experience to boot, but we'll see exactly how the Bucks fare. How about the Cleveland Cavaliers as a dark horse contender in the Eastern Conference? Yes, the Knicks, the Sixers, even the Bucks get a little bit more attention than the Cavaliers, especially where the Cavaliers did not make hardly any moves this offseason. It's basically an identical roster. They do have a new head coach, of course, Kenny Atkinson. He's expected to bring continued growth and improvement to a team that they thought maybe they were stagnant a little bit. And he's coming from a Warriors coaching staff where he was an assistant for a recent championship, so he has that experience. Rather than changing their roster or adding a bunch of new players, they focused on keeping the same unit intact. And it's a great unit. You don't blame them. Donovan Mitchell, Evan Mobley, Jarrett Allen, Isaac Okoro, Tristan Thompson resigned as well. But Mobley and Allen inside set a great defensive, physical, rebounding tone. And then Mitchell is a cold-blooded playoff performer and a scorer. He's not afraid to take a shot. He's pretty efficient, especially in playoff situations. And so this team, I think, has pieces. I think what they really need is perhaps some front court depth. I think that's a bit of an issue behind Allen and Mobley, who is that next, you know, third center that can fill in with some size and some rebounding. But they're looking to contend now. And I think offensively, if they can start to get more offense from Mobley and Strus continues to shoot the ball very well, this team has a lot of potential in the Eastern Conference. But at the end of the day, who are we kidding ourselves? Who is going to compete with the Boston Celtics, really, unless there's some inner issues? What we saw from this team last season, they only lost 3 games throughout their playoff run. They won 64 games in the regular season, and they spent a lot of money this offseason to keep that lineup intact. They did not want to have, you know, like the Nuggets had where Bruce Brown left after the championship year. They want this team to be intact. The only moves they really made, they had Lonnie Walker the fourth come in to replace Sviatoslav Mikhailiuk, who's leaving. Not too much change there. And then they added a rookie draft pick in Baylor Shireman. How he fits in, does he have a role? He might just be a low minutes guy. That would probably be the expectation. But also the expectation, they want to return to the finals. Clear and simple. They're the team that you expect to be contending this next year. There are questions, though. Kristaps Porzingis injured to start the year. It'll impact the start of the season. How does that impact the team's play? And there's also some outside factors. The looming potential sale of the team, how does that impact the players? And also, there's continual speculation of rifts or issues between Jaylen Brown and the other Celtics stars. The fact that Jaylen Brown was not a part of Team USA in this past Olympics, you know, that was a big talking point, and I understand that, but at the end of the day, this was one of the more dominant teams we've seen over the last 5 to 10 years in the NBA. I mean, offensively, defensively, cohesive team play. They have good draft capital going forward. Again, not only Tatum, but Derek White re-signed. Sam Hauser, a great bench piece. They kept a lot of the front court depth with Luke Kornet, Xavier Tillman. Al Horford's getting older. That's also a question. But this Celtics team is the front runner in the Eastern Conference, if not the front runner in the entirety of the NBA. And that's all there is to it. It's the Celtics conference to lose. They should be the team to watch out for in the Eastern Conference. So that should be most everything for our conference preview. Again, just talking through all the teams, I think there's a lot of intrigue in both conferences. And again, we'll do our Western Conference preview tomorrow. Be prepared. We do have the plan as of now for Wyatt to hop on for that episode. We'll let you know probably day of, honestly, if anything changes there. But he should hopefully be good for that, and it should be a fun preview there as well. And then, of course, on Friday, we'll also do our 79th season storylines, so be on the lookout for that. Let's go ahead, before we wrap things up, take care of our This Day in History fact for you. Let's go ahead and do that now. Today's is coming from 1968.
At the Clark of Baltimore. Baltimore 1. Now they lead by 2. Beautiful timing by Unsoeld. Yeah. Right through the middle there. Now you got to remember, Webby Unsoeld is about 6'7", 6'8", about 250.
All right. For those listening, those watching, you saw Wes Unseld, great play. That was in his rookie year. On this day in 1968, Wes Unseld made his debut for the Baltimore Bullets at home against the Detroit Pistons. The Bullets won 124-116. Unseld, phenomenal player, and he's always going to get forgotten because his play style was not very star-like. Although he's one of only two players to be a league MVP and Rookie of the Year in the same season. He won a championship with the Bullets in 1978. He was just a shorter, stout, rebounding center who was one of the greatest outlet passers of all time, defensively sound, a team leader, and undeniably one of the greatest of all time, even if it really wasn't a flashy style of play. But he was a phenomenal player, and wish he would get a little bit more credit. A lot of those guys, especially from the late 60s throughout the 70s in that ABA era. Again, I like to talk a lot about that, but those guys all phenomenal. Wes Unseld, no exception certainly to that. So again, that takes care of our episode today. Thank you all again for listening. We can't thank you enough for your support. We'll be back with you tomorrow for our Western Conference preview, and we'll see you then.